The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's the Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
All right, it's that time again. Back on the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network. I'm your host, Jay, here in the Brewing Network studios in downtown Concord. Here with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, what's up?
Here with Bevo. Hey, Bevo.
So long. Hi.
You have one job.
I know.
To say hello once every hour and a half. Are you cold in there?
You put on a parka.
Yes.
Really? Okay. Are you doing some singing practice?
Absolutely not.
Just hanging out? No.
This room isn't that soundproof.
Okay. And we have our in-studio guest tonight. I gotta get it together. It's daytime. Kevin from
barely past noon here.
Kevin from Cellador is nice enough to join us with his company and his beers, which have been lovely so far. Again, I will remind you, nay, batter you to email us Scott@thebrewingnetwork.com, Jay@thebrewingnetwork.com. You can watch us thebrewingnetwork.com/TV. You can listen live to the show on the Brewing Network app. Search BN Mobile in the search bar of wherever you do that kind of thing. Subscribe and leave feedback on the Apple Podcast app or wherever you are consuming the show. And, yeah, I'll give you another reminder. You know, we don't ask a lot of you. Just spend all your money with our sponsors. Subscribe to every show. Tell all of your friends to subscribe to every show.
Spend all your time listening to all the shows.
And email us once a week with questions. And leave a 5-star review with a long and funny review.
That's all we ask.
Yeah,
it's not,
that's it. And you get this whole show for free. So, you know, get it together, guys.
Come on, man.
Come on. And thanks for listening. So, yeah, I'm getting angry at the top.
Yeah, it's berating the audience is the number one rule of podcasting.
Yeah, number
one. Make sure you berate them.
I'm podcaster of the decades, guys.
Self-appointed.
Yep. We've got some more beer open. This is a really interesting beer. Like, I probably could say that about every beer we've opened so far. But this is Pêche what?
Pêche Fumé.
Fumé. Oh, double E on the Fumé.
Fumé. It's the French, you know.
Oh, I know. I was just feigning ignorance, so I would be more relatable to the audience.
Typical American ignorance.
This beer is crazy. Tell us what is going on.
Yeah,
here.
So this is a smoked peach beer. We mentioned earlier, like, we're a real small team, and we get lots and lots of fruit every year. So we often just have friends and, like, club members in helping us cut. And we, like, did a barbecue for them once, and at the end of it, like, cut open some peaches because we were processing peaches. Threw some on the barbecue and just ate them. And, like, I thought it was a really, really cool flavor. And it sort of inspired this beer. So the next season, we got a bunch of peaches. And we also got a bunch of peach wood. It wasn't from the same farm. It was from a different farm. And we used about half of the peaches smoked in, like, a hot smoker for, like, maybe 30 minutes. And half of them we, like, burnt to a crisp, like, on an open fire grill with the same wood. And we added that all into a blend of, I think it was like one barrel of like red sour that was in whiskey barrels and one like sort of like blonde mixed culture saison base, and aged it for a couple months and bottle conditioned it. And this was our last club beer of 2018. So it's about a year in the bottle.
Yeah, see on it. It's a single barrel syndicate release, and this is a nice label as well. What went into like the decision to go burnt on the peaches rather than more smoked or roasted or whatever?
Probably because the inspiration was from like burning the peaches in the beginning. And I just like really, really love burnt foods, like burnt pizza crust or like burnt anything. And I thought it would be a fun component to it.
You know, I know that's a thing. Like my mom loves that. I do not. Where's your palate at for burn things, Jay?
Well, I'm a great chef, so I don't burn. No, I'm just
Oh, I'm a terrible chef and I burn things a lot. Oh.
You learned to love.
What's up?
Oh, I lost all sound. I thought you turned me off.
Oh, no.
There we go. I just unplugged myself.
Do you like burn things?
I do.
You do? See, yeah. It's
yeah.
Some
yeah I also like burn
you
things.
You do?
Yeah.
Man, you guys are crazy.
No, I mean, but like, there's a hard line on toast. Burned toast is inedible.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's true.
Really? What is
But like, pizza crust that's like black is like the best thing ever.
So good.
Round Table Pizza, they like go over like the crust bump with the cheese. And it goes over, and then the cheese burns on the bottom.
Slightly burned grilled cheese sandwiches, also. Yes. So good.
So a little char makes sense to me, but the, like, black burn thing doesn't.
Like meat, too? Like a little, like, crispy outside?
Yeah, of course. Yes, the seared outside. Yes, yes. But not
cheese and
burned.
Meat. Cheese and meat. If it's black, it's great.
Man. Okay, well.
I mean, the whole thing is black? No.
Like, I like burned marshmallows, too.
So you are
yeah,
you
the
person that
my marshmallow catches
it?
On fire,
yeah,
and yeah. then I blow it out and
right.
eat it.
Yeah.
Get I think well like... Done. On our Instagram, like back to December 2018, you can see some like videos of us burning the shit out of them.
I mean, when I was at the brewery, we made a beer called Autumn Maple.
It was probably a little bit before that because it was bottled in December, so it would have been like August or September, probably August.
And we would say we put roasted yams in the beer, but really they were just like fucking burnt. That's like throw them in the mash tun and like mash them all up. But that was a huge pain in the
That's
ass.
Cool.
Shout out to Autumn Maple.
Yeah, so this is the first one we did that was smoked. And then right after this, we also did a smoked kombucha squash beer with like a real dark sour beer.
Smoked squash.
Yeah, it was a polarizing beer to say the least. Like people either really, really loved it or like really, really hated it. It tasted kind of like barbecue sauce. But like
really?
In a good way. I thought it was really cool. I mean, actually, we did it again this year. We did like one barrel batch. And then we did smoked figs. We bottled it.
Yeah.
It's all the smoked beers we've done.
Wow. That's cool. You know, smoked figs, to me, if I rank those in order of how much it makes sense to do.
Yeah.
Number one, smoked figs. Number two, the smoked peaches. And number three, the squash.
Yeah.
When you're production limited to about 400 BBL per year, you know, we'll get into this in a second, but it's all oak barrels and barrel ferments. You know, I find at the rare barrel, sometimes we have to be very judicious in what types of beer we make, because if you have a wild hair of an idea
yeah.
and you know you make two oak barrels of it, you know that's 1% of your production or something like that,
yeah, right?
So how do you deal with that? Like, how much of this beer did you make, for instance?
I don't know, like to a detriment, like I think I treat this as like an art project more than a business, like too often, and so I don't really take that into consideration. If I think there's like a really cool thing to do, like we'll do at least a barrel of it, like no matter what. Is that those kombucha squashes weren't even my idea. That was one of the guys that works for me who actually helps us source a bunch of fruit. I think he's sold fruit to you guys. His name's Adam Romney, mm-hmm. pot produce. He works with me in the brewery too. And him and the other guy that worked for me like both came from food side, which like I prefer, like in the guys that are gonna help me on the brewing side.
Sure.
Like they have really good like ideas. And so it was Adam's idea to do the squashes. And I was a little skeptical, but I like how it turned out.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. What do we
here's,
have
this
here,
is the, this is the Instagram video that Kevin described of them torching the peaches on the barbecue. It's a charcoal barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a ripping fire. Yeah. A roaring, some would say.
Peaches roasting on an open fire.
I see you flipping them like along the way. Does that matter in this case where you're
I guess not.
Incinerating them?
Definitely burnt
your arms. Yeah, you're taking great care in flipping them.
So yeah, and then there's some pictures too with the video, and it's
that's,
yeah, there's some really
that's
really
a gorgeous
good char
picture.
Here.
That looks like it should be in like a food, a food magazine.
Yeah, totally.
That's great. How many likes did that get? Bunch, I bet.
We're looking at it just says Jim from Firestone Walker.
That's all that matters.
He liked it, and
so
did others.
Yeah. Awesome. So you know, I was asking about volume, so but I guess this beer is a single barrel. That's kind of the
two barrels, I think.
Two barrels.
Yeah, and you know, like for the
two BBL
two
or
oak barrels,
two oak barrels
for the club. This is one of our club beers, and for that, like at least one of two of the beers that we do throughout the year, I want to do something like crazy and like. Ideally, something never done before. Mm-hmm. Like I like the idea of that a lot.
It's getting
like
harder and harder.
Creating something like completely new.
So the single barrel syndicate beers aren't all
yeah. The
one
first year,
barrel.
The first year they were single barrel, like they were all one barrel, and then since then it's grown.
You realize you could make money selling more beer.
Yeah, one of the releases we did this year was all magnums. So that was like 900 magnums. The package was definitely more than a barrel.
Wow, how'd that turn out?
Really great, yeah. It was a major pain in the ass. Like, we're not going to do it ever again, I don't think. But, yeah, It worked out really well. It was actually one of my favorite beers we've ever made. I brought a smaller bottle of it.
Oh, not a Magnum, though.
Not a Magnum.
All right. Well, you can go.
If I can make a quick note on this beer, I want to. There's so many more I would like to try. But so this, it's interesting because, you know, when I first, I didn't, you know, you said smoke beer, but I didn't really remember. I smelled it and I was like, oh, is this like a, you know, what is the style that has, it's kind of has acetone characteristic to it, but in a pleasant way. Is an oud brewing kind of thing?
Oh, like more acetic.
Acetic, I'm sorry. Acetic, yeah, it's not acetone. Wrong.
But that's very closely related to ethyl acetate, the acetone you're talking about.
For sure. So when I smell, I got that on the aroma, and then I was like, oh, interesting, you know. And then I tasted it, and at first glance, I was like, oh, yeah. And then that immediately went away, and I was like, oh, no, it's smoke.
Yeah.
Do you guys experience that correlation?
There's a tiny bit of acetic character in this beer, for sure. And I don't know if that's correlated to smoke at all. I mean, what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. But I mean, I could definitely see like the phenolic character of smoke,
right,
coming across that way,
right?
But yeah, I had the similar confusion, and then once I tasted it, my brain like matched the two together.
Yeah,
essentially.
Right.
Totally. Yeah, because the aroma is mostly smoke, and like in a kind of weird way, and the flavor you get that kind of like cooked peach, like kind of silky, like mouthfeel.
Yeah. Super interesting. Sorry, this is going to be dead air for a second while.
Yeah, while we both drink it. It's really wonderful. I mean, smoke and acid seems like two compounds that are a challenge to make work together.
Seems fair to say.
I mean, well, it is doable.
I know, the hot sauce I'm making right now would beg to differ.
Are you still making sourdough bread too?
No, you know, flour just gets fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, it does.
And then if there's any liquid like that, it's like cement.
Mm.
So the mess was just like debilitating.
It's funny. My sister lives on Maui. She's got a farm out there, and she's been brewing kombucha. And actually, she's been working a lot with. Well, I don't need to go into this on the air, but the point is, whenever she goes anywhere, she always cooks everything. Like she's, you know, chef, farmer, you know, and, you know, she walks around barefoot all the time. It's Maui, and she's a mess. She's a hippie. Yeah, exactly. But the point is, you always know when she's been somewhere because there's a thin coating of flour on everything in the house.
It's like having a pet.
Yeah, no, really. Pets are a little less messy, but generally, yes.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay, what beer's next?
I guess let's do this this bottle we got out.
Let's pop it while it's here, and then we'll do our break. Yeah, sure.
I'm kind of losing track of time because I'm just really into these beers.
Yeah, me too. I think we can do this one and then take our break.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's do it. So this is, while Scott is opening it, this is an interesting presentation. So this is a beer that is in like a squat bottle, which is a clear bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's almost like a little mini spirit bottle.
And I believe
it's
still
like a 375 milliliter clear like whiskey bottle. It's a still beer.
So what's this called and what kind of beer is it?
We call it Jackson Ranch. It's sort of like loosely named off my dog Jackson, but I also wanted a name that kind of like evoked whiskey. It reminded me of like Rowan's Creek or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a red, like a rye based red beer that was aged in second use whiskey barrels for 8 months. And then we did a blend of two barrels, and then we split that blend back into two fresh whiskey barrels for 8 more months. Then we bottled those barrels separately. And so one of them was a Knob Creek. The one we have here is a Knob Creek barrel that I think was 13 or 14 years aged whiskey. And the other one was a High West double rye barrel, which was like 9 or 10 years old whiskey.
Wow.
And the idea was to like make a beer that looked and tasted as much like rye whiskey as we could do. When we released this beer, we did like a whole cocktail day, and me and the two other guys that worked for me that came from food, we each came up with 3 cocktails, and we used this beer as the base, and we made like cocktails with ice, you know, shaken stuff, stirred stuff in coupe glasses or cocktail glasses. We had a really great time and seemed like a lot of people came out and seemed like they really enjoyed it. This particular variant is the one we all kind of like a little bit more. It's the High West one. Or sorry, it's the Knob Creek version, and it's a little more sherry-like than the other one. You get like a lot of these like oxidative, you know, like dark fruit characters, lots of sherry characters.
Mm-hmm.
Very like rich caramel, but not just caramel. Like, and we were just talking about smoked beers, but it's like a not burnt, just like a over caramelized caramel kind of.
Yeah, it's like molasses raisin.
Yeah, definitely.
So you know, you wanted it to taste like whiskey as much as possible. Did that have the influence on the way you presented this beer as well in that bottle? And
yeah, definitely, absolutely. I think about that a lot, you know, and like the way you present something, like the color of the beer or like the...
I mean, not enough. You didn't think of the upside down label, though, for the character.
Yeah, you got me there. But like the shape of the bottle or like the type of the bottle and the label design, like all those things to me are like really important to like, especially for these like more interesting projects that we do.
You even like, so yeah, it's Jackson Ranch, big letters, and then there's a JR like in the little, you know, like featured spot of the label, which is...
Which camera?
Which is totally just like, this is not a beer status.
Yeah, yeah. I want to trick you a little bit. Yeah.
Put it on you now.
This guy right?
It's amazing. And I think you guys accomplished the goal. And, I think it's very whiskey-like.
And we took this out of the fridge like at least an hour ago. When we serve it in the tasting room, we don't chill it at all. We serve it at room temperature. Actually, we serve it in those like real fancy like Glencairn whiskey glasses.
Mm. Yeah, those are cool.
And yeah, if you like are interested in getting it and making cocktails, we put all the recipes up on our website too. Obviously, you have to come to the brewery. We still have a few bottles left of it. But yeah, it was a real fun project.
Did you come to get the whiskey?
Yeah, Bevo's in on this one.
Wow. Let's all stop and
yeah, everyone watch Bevo sip.
This is like a rare moment.
Yeah, it's got a acidic character for sure.
That's good.
Mm.
You like it?
Yeah,
great.
Yay.
That's like 10 GABF medals right there. Bevo getting up and walking in to try a beer.
That's the award everyone really wants.
Yeah. I've never seen it myself in the wild.
It very rarely.
Have you guys ever done a still beer?
You know, we just did. We do this thing for our club. Any member who's been in the club for 5 years will do like an additional kind of allocated beer. I'd say... free, but I guess, you know, once you buy the club membership, it's all, you know, what do I get? And it's all, but it's a bonus beer, and it's only for those people who have been in for 5 years, and it's called, the first year we did it was last year, and it's called We Are Because of You. It worked out really well, because we made our spontaneous beer, and our idea was to do it served still in the bottle, and it worked out where we just called the second year beer We Are Still Because of You.
And, nice.
It worked out great. You know, and lambic is a style that, yeah, you know, can be served still. So that was pretty cool. But, you know, it was in our regular bottle. One thing that concerned me about doing that was the stability of that beer. Have you seen, how old is this beer? Have you seen any changes? You know, serve it at, you know, ambient temp, but do you store it at ambient temp, or how does that all work?
We store it at ambient temp. It's been in bottles for maybe 5 or 6 months. With this particular beer, I don't worry about it too much. So there's a lot of oxidative characters in the beer, right? And typically in sour beer making, that would equate to like lots of acetic acid and acidity, right? And the reason why I don't think this beer has a lot of that is because it's got a lot of alcohol. It's 10%. And also it's got a lot of like dark malts. And so I think anything alive in it is dead. And so
anything alive in it is dead. That's really deep.
Interesting. Yeah,
that's right. That's not the right way to say that. Anything that could be alive in it is dead.
Yeah.
Like all the yeast that was there, not living anymore. And so instead of turning into like acetic acid, you actually can get these like cherry type notes and like oxidative notes in the sour beer. And because of that, because it's already oxidated, I don't worry too much about oxygen. We actually tell people like they can open it and drink it over a couple days and like see how it changes. If it was like a younger, lighter beer, I might worry more about it.
And this is just like sort of a random question, but so with the, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but there's like a cork, you know, removable and replaceable cork stopper on top.
Right.
When I usually see this, you know, in like a spirit or something.
Yeah.
There's like a wrap or something. Is that necessary? Is that just for show?
Like, I think that, I don't know if there's like laws around that or anything.
Maybe it's like an open container related. Yeah.
It seemed like a little bit too much work for me to do, and that's something.
That sounds right. That sounds correct. Yeah,
I didn't think about it much past that.
Well, awesome. This beer is a triumph, and what a roller coaster of flavor this has been. I don't even know if we've had such a variety on any show so far.
I mean,
this has been the depth of flavor, the variety. It's awesome. I feel like I'm wrapping up to end the show.
It's true. Yeah, we have more to go.
I was compelled to say that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to talk like Kevin's not here. I think what he said about, you know, this being an art project, I'm feeling that. I'm feeling that going through this tasting. So it's really quite something.
I mean, as a consumer that doesn't have to make any numbers for the art project work, it's freaking wonderful.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's great.
That would be amazing. That's like the goal, you know, is like, do anything without regard to what it costs.
Right. Every brewer's goal, you know.
That's called a hobby.
Yeah. Every pro brewer's goal is to realize they made a huge mistake and go back to home brewing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it is interesting, and I know we need to get to a break, but, you know, it's like, I guess like in a lot of fields where, you know, there's a way to do things that's like 100% legit and unimpeachable. Sorry, hot topic. that's just like, you know, here, this is like, oh, you're really staying like true to the game and everything. And then there's like 0%, which is like selling out completely and being corporate and all that stuff. And every brewer has their threshold on, you know, either side. Yeah. But the closer you can get, just don't give a fuck is, that's the dream.
That is the dream. Like, really, I'm very, very, very much like, want to give thanks to like the people that support us too, because like we can only do it because they take the risk to like spend this 375 milliliter bottle is like $25. So like they take the risk
as it should be.
Yeah, they take the risk to spend the money on it and like support us, and like I really am grateful for that.
Yeah, and just thinking on that note, how expensive the beer is, which I think is that's worth it for sure. But to that end. Yeah, I appreciate that you guys do these cocktails and, you know, post the recipes. I like the taste of whiskey, so I can just, you know, have it straight. I would encourage people to enjoy this. Mm.
Make a cocktail with it.
No. I'd say without doing the cocktail. Oh, not to go against what you guys have posted.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's so much to experience with this that, because I mean, making, you know, you don't make cocktails with like the best whiskey in the world, right?
Yeah,
right?
No. Can I get a Grey Goose with orange juice? Like,
to that point, like the beer wasn't made to be like blended. It's something fun that we did. Like, it's made to be experienced the way it is.
And I would recommend people do that for sure. All right, break time.
Yes,
let's take a break. This is the Sour Hour, I think. Yeah, still. Yeah, on the Brewing Network.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, it's Topher from Wildfire Brewing and Blending. Okay. G'day, mates. It's Topher from Wildfire Brewing and Blending in Sydney, Australia. You're listening to the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
Oh, yeah. The way he says Sour Hour. So good.
He's American, just for the record.
Living in Sydney, Australia.
Yeah.
Our great guest, three shows ago, something like that.
Two shows. It was John Rowley, and then Wildflowers, the shows before that.
We've had a nice streak of in-studio guests.
Yes. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. It was great. So Topher came just for the show from Sydney, Australia. John came from New Mexico.
Yes.
In and out on the same day.
That's right.
And, Kevin's coming from SoCal.
Yeah, but Kevin spent in, and not only is he coming from SoCal, he's spending the night in San Francisco. I mean, he didn't even do the one-day trip.
That's fun. That's just fun times.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I just thought of the San Francisco thing, but that's not, it's not appropriate for the, I'll tell you off air.
Okay. Don't forget, make a note next to your meth note.
Yeah, reminder to smoke meth. Which sounds like it's the story that I was going to tell.
Jay has written on. Jay is using a coaster in
really
front of him for notes. Shorthand notes, exactly. And which camera is on Veeve?
Yeah.
Which camera is? It's Jay's camera. This one here. I don't know if you guys can see. Smoke meth.
Yep.
What is that?
Sometimes I forget. No, I was going to ask Kevin about the method he used to smoke.
Method.
The fruit from the Fumé beer. But, you know, there's not a lot of space on this
coaster. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Russian River Brewing Company.
Cheap asses.
What have you done for me lately? No, I'm just I've lost all sense of time and space.
Next beer, next beer. Yeah, we have this in our glasses.
That's why you're here, Scott.
Yeah, it is the Dead Crush.
This one is a wine hybrid beer. So, you know, I guess we have kind of a theme, trying to make flavors from other things. But this one, trying to make a beer that was as much wine flavored as possible. So it's, roughly almost 50% Malbec juice mixed with sour beer.
Slightly less for legal.
Exactly, 49.999-ish. And the grapes we got in, we have a little hand crank grape crusher that we use. And we have some open top punch-ins that we use for open fermentations. And we use that to sort of spontaneously ferment the Malbec grapes for a couple days. And then we press those off with a real fancy, homebrew mesh. We just strained them basically, like a mesh strain. And use the juice and the skins for two separate beers. This was the juice beer. And then it was mixed with a beer that had been aging in Malbec barrels for almost a year. And then we put the blend back into the Malbec barrels for a couple months and then bottle conditioned it.
Now, was that just happy coincidence that you had the Malbec barrels? Or did you we need to get Malbec grapes, next year, it had already been in there for a year.
Yeah, so. We'd had the Malbec barrels, and then when we had the opportunity to buy grapes, Malbec was one of the three options we had. And so it just made sense to kind of play into that flavor. Also, the Malbec barrels we got not fully neutral because they were Brett infected at the winery. Mm. So you got kind of a lot of the Malbec character and a lot of oak character in the beer too, which kind of plays into the red winey nature of it too.
Yeah. Did they just come full of Brett infected wine and you guys just bottled it and drank
it? No, they came out too, unfortunately. Yeah. I would love to drink some Brett infected wine.
Yeah.
Did we go through your barrel treatment process? I'm sure it varies.
No.
Right? Because you're not going to treat that Malbec barrel the same as it, or I don't know, you describe it.
Yeah. I mean, if it's something like that, we I don't think we rinsed those at all. We just kind of filled them right away. We did a lot in the beginning too, but after I realized that most wineries are sending this out with a bunch of sulfur burning in them, mm-hmm. we rinse them once at least for the first use, and then between uses we'll do a long hot water rinse at 185 degrees. We don't have steam or anything fancy like that yet, so we always clean our barrels as much as we can, but just with hot water between uses.
It's a good way to go about it. You mentioned the open top fermenters.
Yeah.
Do you guys use that for your regular fermentations that aren't having to do with wine, or what are the...
We have two 400 liter punch-ins we use for open fermentation. So we can get three oak barrels full out of a batch that we usually fill eight or nine barrels. And we sort of use them almost exclusively for one brand that we do called Breeze Blocks, which is a draft only mixed culture, open fermented thing. And it's one of my favorite beers we have around. It's the open fermentation gives it so much more tropical fruit and pineapple-y flavors.
Hmm. Consistently?
Consistently.
Why?
Yeah.
Why? How is it consistent? Do you think it's just the same? Yeah. Why?
I think it's just the our mixed cultures in conjunction with lots of oxygen during primary fermentation.
Interesting.
I don't really know the science behind it.
We're gonna have to try that out because we just had recently one of our punch-ins. One of the heads met an unfortunate end. Let's say that.
Okay.
It's another off-air story.
I highly recommend it. I think the flavors out of it are really interesting. Okay. We do. It's usually in there for about 5 days. Ideally, I'd like to do a little bit shorter, 3 or 4, but because our bar shares a space, it usually has to go through the weekend before we can empty them.
I don't know. If you just drink right from the barrel, it cuts out a lot of the middle.
We do get people complaining about the open beer sitting around. They think it looks kind of gross.
Really?
Yeah. And people have put their fingers in it and stuff, which isn't in the world.
Man.
That kind of sucks.
When you say complaints, a Yelp review? Or
no, in person, I haven't been there, but my bartender's people said they think that's nasty.
Wow. I guess it's sort of going into a steakhouse and you can see them butchering a cow.
Yeah.
Inside the process. There's going to be a segment that doesn't notice. There's going to be a segment that thinks it's cool. And then there's going to be a segment that's grossed out.
It doesn't bother me at all that they don't like it. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of a badge of honor.
Yeah.
It's the headline. Kevin does not care about his cousin. No, I'm just
Hashtag don't care. Yeah.
And thinks you're an asshole if you don't share your farm.
You know what? McLeod is down the street. Their beers are nice and clean, all right?
Bug yeah,
off.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to have to steal that one because, again, we have that
gotcha back.
That punch. And one thing I noticed when we were opening this beer, Dead Crush, is it's in a green bottle, which not all of the beers are. So what goes behind the decision on, you know, I think it was clear from the, no pun intended, from the clear glass on the last beer, what goes in your decision-making, green versus brown when
a
going
couple
into
things.
It?
I mean, I don't think it really matters that much, but for this one, I think that green was a little more like gave that perception of like wine. And also for, cause since it's one of our club beers also, I like to do like different bottles sometimes, just like make it kind of more special for them. Mm-hmm. We also do our like Saison, that's like sort of a clean Saison in green bottles, because we want a little bit of that like skunk flavor in there, the light struck flavor. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll have like extra bottles sitting around from a palette, so we'll use them for other beers.
Interesting. Sorry, I didn't have another question loaded up because Scott has already given me.
Sorry, well, the,
it's not your fault.
Kevin's very generously brought tons of beers. I don't
know,
as
podcaster of the year of the decade,
self-appointed.
You know, I just have a method that you're kind of messing with right now, but
a crystal method.
Yeah, well, yeah. Sometimes if I remind myself, yes. So are we ready to go?
Yeah,
dive in?
Yeah, because
I think we have a lot of beers.
Exactly.
So.
We only got one more segment, and we got lots of beers. So I want to taste them all. Yeah.
Cinque. It means cinque. Five in Italian.
Yeah, like La Cinque Terre, which I was in Italy in May, and that's the five towns. Yeah.
I
was traveling abroad.
My team yells at me a lot about is beer names that are impossible to pronounce. But I don't really care. I like it.
Oh, man, this beer is incredible. Whoa. And this is kind of a return to the sweet tart thing a little bit.
Yeah.
That character's back.
So this beer, our beer club, the Syndicate, has way too many levels. There's like five tiers in our club. And the fifth one is like invite-only exclusive tier. And this was a beer made specially for those people.
Oh, well, I want this.
Do you think that, is there an invite in there somewhere for the best podcaster of the decade?
Yeah.
I think I just got it. I have the beer right here. So
yeah, totally.
So this beer is like wine barrel aged mixed culture saison with black raspberries and vanilla beans.
Vanilla. That's what I'm picking up on. And is this bottle conditioned with honey as well?
Yep, bottle conditioned with orange blossom honey.
Mm.
There's a poem on the side.
Read it.
I really
roses are red.
5 years. And no sound in them. I'm gonna try out for Audible right now.
Please.
So you tell me how I do, Kevin.
Take one.
It's in a former life. 5 years and no sound in them. The world is dumb. I listen with the ear of my curiosity. 5 times I cast the fishing line over me. 5 times I pulled up no fish. I asked. No answer came to me in my net. I listened with the ear of my love.
Nietzsche. Tried to put a bunch of like number five symbolism on the label, except for like the tier five thing. There's some like little Easter eggs.
How did I do?
No,
you notice he blew right past the ratings.
Never.
I should mention we talked off the air only about what Kevin did pre-brewery for a living, and in fact into this almost the second year of the brewery's existence.
Yeah. I was editing and like producing audiobooks, like not the voice, obviously, but the guy behind all the stuff,
doing the actual editing, which is obviously really cool because obviously we do a ton of audio editing here at the Brewing Network, and all three of us for that matter love listening to audiobooks.
Yeah, we really geeked out about that.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. It's like, do we have to do the show about beer now? Well, this is wonderful. This like takes me to a place where it's like, I don't know, just like, you know, going back to the malt shop kind of thing, like a 1950s cherry vanilla Coke kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
It's not overly sweet.
Right.
But there's sweetness to it.
The candy character.
And it just it takes me to that place.
This is just fantastic.
The jukebox.
The jukebox.
I don't remember what the variety of vanilla bean was. I think it says on there. Maybe
Tahitian?
Yeah, Ugandan.
Ugandan.
Yeah, Ugandan vanilla beans.
Yeah, they're a little bit different. They're more like kind of earthy flavors.
Man, this is 8%?
That's great.
Wow, it does not... do you get any heat from that?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Wow. It's an amazing beer.
It definitely
beer.
Has like a cola.
Yeah.
Yes.
An undertone.
100%.
Yeah.
It smells really sweet and cola-y.
Yeah. But it's like... You know, you mentioned in the last show that you guys have a goal in your beer-making philosophy of dryness.
Yeah.
And I think that's still in this. It's like, just enough to be probably one of the sweeter by perception beers in your lineup, but it doesn't linger to be cloying at all. And it's just like, that's really, we're like having a like 6-course meal.
No kidding. I know. Right. Do you have any, like, what is the little melon baller palate thing cleansers? For the palate cleanser?
Yeah. Yeah. Pickle sorbet. Yeah. I think they're all amuse-bouches. Is there a plural to that? Amuse-bouche?
Amuse-bouche-eye?
Yeah.
We're getting punch drunk here.
A little bit. Backtracking just a little bit, back to the wine grapes. Going forward, like, do you have a certain philosophy on, like, because I'm really, as we were talking, I'm really interested in the wine beers. Yeah, do you have a philosophy on, like, how to pick what varietal? I know you mentioned, you know, this last time you only had maybe a limited number of options, but what's your kind of philosophy behind that?
I don't know a ton about wine. Like, I like drinking wine a lot and know, like, very little about the different varietals. And so I think that we choose, like, we look through the options that are available to us, do a little bit of research about each varietal, and just kind of choose something that we think we can make something interesting with, like, based on also, like, what we have available in our barrel stock, because that kind of changes in, like, waves throughout the year also. So for this, like, first year we did Malbec. This year our red varietal was Petite Syrah. And, like, you know, those are known for, like, kind of bigger, like, more robust flavors. And so,
that is a hearty grape. Yeah. We did that a couple years ago, and it is. That is a thick.
Yeah. They don't have that much juice. It's, like, mostly skin. And so, you know, we just kind of, like, almost reversed it the other way, like, kind of pick beer, like, to go with the grapes that are available to us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm just so blown away by it. Not just the variety, but the quality across the board. This is awesome.
Absolutely.
And we have even more to do.
We do. I'm almost, man, should I blend a little Dead Crush in with the Chimpe? I'm going to do a little on-site blend right here.
It'd be weird.
I'm not sure I approve of this. Philosophically, yes. Flavor, no.
I like my blend. Here, I'm passing it to Jerry.
All right, it'll be a beer next year.
Big surprise. Let's see.
Red wine grape.
You might be podcaster of the decade, but I'm blender of the decade.
You ruined it.
No?
I'm sorry I made that mess, Scott.
Yeah.
No, it's good, but I don't know. It looked like you didn't add that much. But
no, I just, yeah, a little splash.
It destroys the vanilla and
the
berry.
Yeah, the vanilla does go away.
It's all the wine now.
Yeah, that's, I guess, because the...
It just tastes like that beer, but, like, not as good version.
Have you guys done vanilla sour beers? You have, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for yeah, sure.
A lot.
Yeah, you do, like, peaches and vanilla, right?
Yeah, the Home Sour Home has that
peach
blend.
Peach, vanilla, cinnamon. Mm-hmm. It's like a peach cobbler sour beer.
That probably just came out recently. Do you put it out around Thanksgiving time every year?
I mean, we're not that good at, like... I mean, it's sour beer, so to tie it to seasons, I don't even, like, try to tie things to events.
Sure, the beer makes the decision, yeah.
Yeah, but coincidentally, our rye whiskey barrel-aged version of Home Sour Home came out.
Oh.
And yeah, it's been flying, so that was
cool.
Really great. And we got some very nice, extremely wet rye barrels. I mean, there's, like, a lot of whiskey in them.
Don't
but not above
that?
The legal limit.
Yeah, of course not. Don't
whatever
you,
that is.
Don't you hate that? The whiskey barrels?
I don't.
Or is it
I don't enjoy making beer in spirit barrels.
Right.
Like
right.
That are bourbon barrels.
Right.
Because they're treated so poorly. The beer that comes out at the end can be great. But
they're the barrels we have that leak, like, all the time.
Yeah, that's what you've said. They just leak like crazy, and
they let a lot of oxygen. So we just needed, like, it's a lot of prep work and, like, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, a very specific decision that we make to, like, a particular way to approach it. Yeah, but it's messy, and there's a lot of loss. But, I mean, the beer that comes out can be amazing. It's just, on the back end, it's... shit show.
Yeah, definitely.
If you had to pick one type of barrel that you could, if you only had to work with one for the rest of your brewing career, what kind of barrels?
I mean, if it's only going to be one barrel, I would pick wine barrels, like probably white wine barrels. I like those a lot. But I think the most fun barrels to work with have been, one of the most interesting is we have a couple of apple brandy barrels, and even after like four beers in them, they give off this like extremely distinct character that I really like.
I would pick 100 barrel fooders. So there'd be less work.
Such an efficient decision.
Thank you.
All right, we have more beers and only one more segment of the decade.
Let's do it. Scott, you take us to break for the first time ever.
Really? Yeah. I don't know how to host the show, man.
You're doing great. Sound just like me.
Thank you very much. Yeah. All right. We will be right back. You are listening to the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
Hey, c'est Jean de la Brasserie Cantillon. Vous écoutez The Sour Hour on Brewing Wet. One more time. Hey, c'est Jean de la Brasserie Cantillon. Vous écoutez la Sour Hour on Brewing Network.
You know, the funny part about that liner is that we never would have known if he had screwed up if he just kept going.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
exactly.
What do we know? Like,
no, I know.
It's like, oh, wait. You mispronounced that word, Jean.
Yeah, come on, Jean. Where's your French at? He was the original. Take two. Take three?
Yeah.
So that's a good way to round out the decade.
He demanded we cut the part where he's like, in an American accent for some reason, ah, shit.
Shit. Vous écoutez shit.
In case you can tell, we're back on the Sour.
Are we?
And we are just getting spoiled rotten here.
My God.
Kevin from Celador with some great beers. This beer is in my glass. I've had a few sips, and I have no idea what it is actually yet. So for the reveal, let's go over to our correspondent, Kevin.
Hello. It's actually not a fruited beer. It's just the base blend from the homage collaborator earlier, Fleur de Masumoto. So we've done this the second year out of the 3 years we've made to collab with them, where we do an unfruited variant of it so people can kind of see how fruit changes the beer. And our personal preference over the years has been to try and dial back the acidity a little bit of the base blend because the fruit adds a lot of acidity. And we really liked a lot of oak and a lot of aged hop character and a lot of kind of natural fruitiness in the beer. So that's what we're aiming for here.
How do you encourage, I guess I know how, and probably the listeners do too, but you're talking about you want oak flavor in that.
Yeah.
And that can be difficult because, that goes away with time and usage. So how do you execute that on a practical basis?
Yeah, I don't know. We're still kind of young, so just to fill our space as we grow, we're buying barrels every now and then, so that helps a little bit. Even the neutral barrels we get, for the most part, within 6 or 8 months, we get some oak pickup on it. For this blend, one of the barrels was that Malbec barrel we were talking about earlier, and it was just insanely, insanely oaky. It had been there for a little bit too long, so it's really only maybe 10% of the blend, but it definitely comes through with some oakiness for it. I think I'd like to try and source more barrels that are a little fresher and have more of that oak flavor in more of our beers.
Gotcha. And one thing I've noticed kind of across all the beers, and this is great, by the way, it's nice to kind of see the mixed culture on display along with the oak, the hops that you're talking about. But one common thread I've seen is fairly high carb in a few of the beers. So is that a stylistic, philosophical choice?
Yeah, that's a personal preference of mine. I like really carbonated mixed culture beers. I think that some of that, I don't know what it stems from, but we aim for high threes, 3.8, 3.9.
That's high.
Volumes of CO2. And it becomes a problem sometimes in our draft beer. My sales guy yells at me sometimes about it. But what we do to try and mitigate that is if we're shooting that high in bottles, if we're going to package draft off the same tank, we'll pre-fill about a third of the keg before we add the conditioning sugar.
So you're doing all keg conditioning?
We're doing all keg conditioning. Okay. So, to dial in our keg carb levels, we are adding some of the beer before the sugar.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. And it's another way to definitely enhances that perceived dryness in a lot of the beers.
Yeah,
we're
definitely
talking about hops, high carb, and you're fermenting low.
I think it's also one of the components that enhances the mouthfeel too, which is something one of my top goals is to have, like I mentioned earlier, that dryness, but also that really big mouthfeel as much as possible.
Definitely. How do you like this beer, Scott?
Yeah, it's incredible. It has that goozy thing going on. That's the first one of the lot of today's beers, and maybe actually the first one that I've had from Celador so far that has that. Is it the aged hops? I wonder.
Absolutely, I think that like the main majority, like 90% of the flavor of Goose is like the aged hops.
Yeah.
It's like the most important thing to Lambic and Goose. It's like still kind of difficult to dial in, like getting the aged hops and like how long you age them and like what variety you're using, but like it's definitely like attainable like an American sour beer by just using aged hops. Like none of the stuff we do is spontaneous, so that's obviously not the flavor of it, it's just the hops.
And it's a tremendous advantage for American sour beer makers who don't either need to or choose to adhere to traditional methods like you see in a lot of Belgian lambic and goose blenders. You can just kind of take the different components of what they do, like you did with the carrot beer in the last show. You know, it's a modified kind of, you take parts of the brew day, I would say, of a lambic production, but not the spontaneous
fermentation. Exactly, yeah, we take like all the parts we think that are important to making the flavors of lambic that we can like achieve given the things that we have, you know, the space requirements and stuff.
And so I wonder if, and I'll ask you this, Kevin, but to speak to your point, Scott, I wonder if the base of the carrot beer tasted like this and had that character before the carrot, and you just can't really like, I mean, you interpreted it as a spice,
yeah.
Like, but that's through all the 25% of it being
100%. Yeah, so. I wonder the same thing.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely, I like from tasting the barrels before it has some of that character.
Gotcha.
Maybe not to this extent. This beer has like a lot of that character, and more of our beers, we're like striving to kind of make that part of the component of blending, at least.
Cool. So one, you know, we've had so many beers, and I'd say this is like a beer by beer focused show. We're doing like kind of micro glances at your process along the way, but let's take a step back and look at the macro view.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to, you know, being a brewery that gets their wort from offsite, doing barrel fermentations, maintaining your mixed culture, walk us through kind of some of the just like the practical challenges and things that you guys have troubleshooted on, I guess, just the overall production of any beer you'd make at Celador.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues, especially like being it's that it's mostly just me, like on the production side doing everything. Having contracting wort as our situation helps that in a certain sense because we can just like kind of hire the brewers at that brewery, which is McLeod, right by us, to help us with the actual brew process. Like we send all our own raw ingredients there and our own recipes, but it gives me like the time during the day to like focus on the barrel prep and like having everything and the mixed cultures and having everything ready. But I kind of mentioned earlier, one big issue is keeping mixed culture around without having like a lot of wort all the time and like topping off and feeding our mixed cultures. And we're to the point now where we're brewing enough, like almost on a weekly basis, that it's not really an issue. Bottling is like a huge problem with such a small team. Sometimes we'll do like 2,000 or 3,000 bottles, and like it's a real like not fun day.
What kind of bottle?
It's, you know, like the standard like gravity fed wine bottling, like kind of taking everything on and off by hand and capping every bottle like individually. Same with labeling, like hand rolling every bottle on like a little like one at a time machine. So the constraints are mostly like time constraints and like, you know, human resources constraints.
Gotcha.
And like, when you're that small, to like grow in any way just like affects everything else in like this sort of like cascade of like side effects. So it's a tough process.
And how would you describe, you know, you talked about your mixed culture a little bit. How would you describe what that is? Because I think our listeners definitely really geek out on all the different ways people approach that. It's like, oh, hey, I only sourced, I think wildflower, you know, they literally got like yeast from local wildflower, you know, it's like from the flora and wait, which one's the animal? Fauna?
Fauna.
So probably not the fauna, but the local flora. And so what is there like a backstory to your mixed culture that you tell, or you're just kind of like, here's what works and that's what we do.
Yeah. So we actually have like five different mixed cultures that we keep around in different carboys, and we almost always use all of them for every batch. But to me, the idea is to keep like one mixed culture from getting too like homogenized. If like we keep them separately, then like they all kind of have their interesting components that stay around. And two of them came like all the way back from homebrewing days. It was mostly bottle dregs from like Jester King and
Rare Barrel.
Rare Barrel. No, not Rare Barrel actually. Who else? One of my favorite breweries is Jolly Pumpkin. A lot of like Jolly mm-hmm. Pumpkin dregs. And then one of our cultures is just like a lot of different Brett strains from a lot of different labs that we've kept around for a couple of years and kept fetting. Like we feed them, you know, kind of like a sourdough culture. We just like use them partially and then top them off with wort. And one of them started as the skins of peaches that we just kind of open-fended. So there's like a mix of like other brewery stuff and like lab stuff and some like wild naturally caught stuff.
And, you know, so we've talked about how you're between 3 and 4 years into this. What do you see as like the near term future for Celador?
Hazy IPAs.
All in. All in. Get them cans.
Yeah, right. No, I think like I want to keep doing what we're doing and like grow it a little bit. We'd love to like, we talk about eventually like getting a bigger space and having our own brew house and maybe doing some like barrel rested lagers in addition to like the sour beers and just kind of keeping it those two things.
Rested. I like that.
Barrel. Yeah.
So what I heard there was hazy IPAs.
Exactly.
And I stopped listening. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You answered the question before you got done asking it.
Podcast for the decade.
Seltzers.
And see a hard seltzer, right?
Love
barrel
seltzer.
Barrel aged,
obviously. Barrel rested.
Barrel rested.
All right, we have a couple things. We have one more beer here that's open, and then we have the question, of course.
Yeah, this label of this next beer does not remind me of any other beer whatsoever.
Yeah, super original.
My copyright attorney.
Yeah, right.
It used to be even more similar, and we kind of changed it up a little bit. But this beer is like a little homage to Saison de Ponce.
That's weird, because I don't see that at
all. Not at all. How is one to know?
What camera are we on?
We haven't had a cease and desist yet.
Me. Oh, okay, yeah. Here. There you go.
No, I just switched it to you.
To me. Okay, yep.
It's also, you know, not unlike this other beer, packaged in green bottles with corks and cages.
Yeah.
Unlike anything like that comes to mind.
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little bit of a cheater beer for this because it's, you know, technically not a sour beer. It's the only beer that we brew that's like monoculture with a lab. We use the Saison strain from Bootleg Biology.
Shout out to Jeff.
And it's like our other beers, like primary fermented and aged in oak barrels for 3 months and then bottle conditioned with orange blossom honey.
Saison Parfait?
Saison Parfait, yeah.
So aged in oak barrels, does it see exposure to the mixed culture at that point?
Ideally not. We use oak barrels that have only ever been used for this one beer.
Okay.
But, you know, we accept
possible.
The idea that, like, there's probably some, like, Brett and bacteria shit in there.
Yeah.
But we hop it pretty heavily, like 35 IBUs to try and avoid that and, you know, pitch a really big, healthy dose of Saison yeast in the beginning.
So the Parfait blend, we might have used it a few times. Love Bootleg Biology, by
They're
the way.
They're amazing. Their breast strings are great, too.
Yeah. And Jeff's beard, out of control. Great, great beard game. So I don't know, where does that like finish in primary fermentation?
It finishes pretty dry. I think that this beer is always around like half Play-Doh finish gravity. It's like 10.02.
Okay, so you're not, another reason not to be too worried about.
Exactly, unless that's, you know, dryness from Brett, which is also a possibility.
Okay, oh yeah, from that strain?
No, just from our barrels.
Oh, yeah, from like the barrel. Oh, but where does it finish before? Oh, yeah, I mean,
we don't know. Yeah exactly. Yeah. So, like, we age it in the barrels, and we don't rack it out of those barrels. It's like aged on the yeast.
Totally,
those 3 months.
It's fantastic.
I don't really try it like all our other beers. I don't really try it in the first couple weeks. So I don't know like how quickly it's like drying out.
Sure,
but like within a month, it's, you know, fully dry.
Nice. Yeah. What do you think about this one, Scott?
It's terrific. Yeah, certainly. Of course, it has less. You know, not no acidic character.
It has a little bit of acidity, right?
Yes. But otherwise, yeah, like it's effervescent, it's clean, like everything that's a big through line, everything we've had today doesn't have a hint of any type of acid you don't want to taste, right?
Right.
Yeah, and to be clear also, this isn't like a clone of Saison DuPont, it's just like, you know, a clean Saison.
Like you said, homage.
It is an homage, yeah, that's what it tastes like. It's evocative without being that beer.
Wow, yeah, I mean, we're just really dropping the vocab.
Saison DuPont has more aged hop character, I think.
I don't know if it's aged hop character, but it's that, I think it's that like green
skunky. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Which this beer is, this is the newest bat. No, it's from July. So it gets more as it's in bottle longer, but also it doesn't really see much light. We like put it in boxes. Right.
If it did, you think it would head more in that direction?
Absolutely. Well, 100%. Like not necessarily like DuPont, but it would have more of that character.
Sure. I mean, it would be complimentary.
Yeah. I mean, where do you buy Saison DuPont? That's a real question, right?
Well, the hop grenade, for one.
Not on draft.
You guys serve it?
Yeah. In bottles, we have it from... Yeah, we haven't had it recently, but yeah, I mean, as consistently as we can, yeah.
So I'm thinking more like, if I asked that to the listeners and we like ranked it in order to be like right. the BevMo,
the dusty,
or if you're in
BevMo
like the Midwest,
shelf.
Like the Binnie's
yeah.
kind
sure,
of thing.
Sure.
Yeah, how old are the bottles?
I mean, they're in the grocery store, 100%. And it's like, so there's, you know... That's
some age and yeah, light there.
It's almost
but
like,
to be clear, like I love that character. I think
I
it's
do
like
too. Yeah,
the defining thing about DuPont that makes me love it so much.
Agreed.
Sort of like Mexican beer too. It's like
I was just gonna say
nostalgia for that. I love Mexican beer also.
Me too.
I think when we did Jester King episode one the first time, they were talking about like Dos Equis
mm-hmm.
and yeah. you know like being outside and having Dos Equis and like liking that kind of skunked lager kind of thing, and that
yeah.
fed into the decision to do Petit Prince. Or as they say, Petit Prince.
Yeah, in the green bottles.
Yeah, in the green bottles. So yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense.
We talked about like, you know, putting pallets of it out in the sun for like a couple hours. But I just think that I don't want to overdo it. And also, it wouldn't be consistent. So I don't think it makes sense.
Yeah. Can't put the toothpaste back in the tube once yeah. that happens.
All right.
Are we getting there?
Yeah, let's do the question before we wrap up.
All right, Kevin. Yo. What's the biggest mistake sour beer making?
I really should have thought about this before.
I mean, everyone yeah. knew that. Everyone
knew
who yeah. listens to the show.
If only
that.
I would have thought about it.
But I think that it's not using hops. I think that like it's not as big of a deal nowadays, but like a lot of sour beer like 5 years ago and before like was flabby and like over acidic. And I think the main culprit of that was like not using any hops. Mm-hmm. Because at least when I was like doing research and getting started like making sour beer at home, that was like the known thing to do, you know, like you make sour beer, you get it sour by like not using any hops. You use like zero IBUs, or use like a few pellets or whatever. And I think that that's a huge mistake.
Sure.
I think that Belgian beer, like Belgian sour beer, it's not fresh hops, but like it's extremely hoppy. It's like fresh lambic is
oh, yeah.
bitter.
Oh, it's super bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, why would you want to not recreate that flavor?
Yeah, and going back to the question that we got, you know, well, what happens if the beer gets too bitter? It's like, well, welcome to making great sour beer.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like, let it age longer. It'll yeah. develop complexity. But I think that's a great answer, and probably one that, you know, if the tables were turned and I was the one now listening to this and going to go start my own brewery, I would have avoided a mistake that we made at the Rare Barrel yeah. to start off. I mean... In early days, we were making a Brett Lacto primary fermentation beer. So it came from a practical place of like,
yeah.
you know, the lactobacillus won't handle, you know, a 25, you know, without pediococcus.
Exactly. You won't have any acidity.
But then that just became the norm when we moved on to other things. And it was fine up front because, you know, we were worried about the beers not
yeah.
getting sour. And then it just so quickly escalated
yeah.
to like, oh, this is... We've got more acidity than we'll ever need.
It's hard to blend out acidity, too. Like, in a blender, it's easier to, like, blend in a little bit of acidity.
Totally.
And, like, aged hops are amazing, and if you're homebrewing, you should definitely use them. Just, like, get some whole leaf. And always use whole leaf if you're going to make your own. Just, like, put them in a sack for a couple months.
Mm-hmm. So
it doesn't take even that long. It doesn't take 3 years to make them.
Sure.
Like, within 6 months, you can have pretty good aged hop character. But also, like, we use a lot of, like, American hops in the whirlpool of our boils. I think that, like... It plays really, really nicely with, like, the Brett and the mixed culture and, like, gets these really cool fruity and, like, you know, stone fruity, tropical fruity aromas that are where it's sort of like you don't really know what's the hop and what's the culture flavor.
Great answer, because I agree with it.
Podcaster of the decade approved.
Boom. And with that, let's be out of here.
Let's
yeah?
be. Yes, I do want to do, given that it is the end of the decade, I want to do some thank yous that don't really ever get done. So indulge me for a moment.
I've been waiting for this.
Okay. First of all, thank you, Bevo.
You're welcome.
Thanks for being a positive presence in my life for the last decade.
Thank you.
I look forward to more in the future.
This is nice. Is he dying or what's going on?
I have. No, I'm just. It's too soon. Thank too you soon. To. Yeah. Thank you to my folks, Marty and Kim, without whom the grenade would not be possible. Thank you to the grenade staff, our main man, Kevin Callahan, and Aaron and Andrew. Andrew and Jason and the recently departed Eric, our beloved Eric.
Still alive, just
still
not
here.
Working here
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah, sorry, I know. This is all very death-related, but no, this is really just, it's really the end of the decade. That's
mm-hmm.
all, you know. And then, of course, to life, L'chaim, in the next decade. So, yes, thanks to all the Grenade staff and all the patrons for supporting us over the years. We appreciate it a ton. We're looking forward to the Roaring Twenties. Thank you to Justin Crossley, Brewcaster Jay, without whom none of this would be possible. Here we are going into year number 16 on the Brewing Network. That is huge. Amazing. I appreciate him and everything he has built, and being a part of it has been a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you to you, Jay Goodwin, and Alex, Tall Alex, and all of you guys at the Rare Barrel for being unbelievably generous and just another amazing presence, positive presence in my life and all of our lives. I love you and I appreciate you a ton. Who else? Thank you to... yes, of course. My wife, Danica, as of my new, like,
new bride.
You know, whatchamacallit, wife. That was a shout out to you, Kevin. for you know, talk about positive presences in my life. That's needless to say, as huge as it gets. And finally, thank you to all of you guys, you BN Army, who download these shows, who support our sponsors.
I'm skeptical of you.
Who tell your friends about the shows, who brew your beer, who are passionate about craft beer and homebrewing and what it is we do around here. Without you, before everyone I just mentioned, it really is without you. That any of, you know, none of this would be possible without you, is what I'm saying. There is no point. We are just talking into the air, which is what it feels like sometimes.
Committed to an insane asylum.
That's right. That point. Totally. Yeah. Which, if any of them were still open, we would for sure be in them.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. I think I've said my piece. We appreciate all of you guys just a ton. So thanks. And here's to the Roaring Twenties, man. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm glad you left me no time to reciprocate.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I mean, I think you said it well, so I won't, retread on your tracks or anything, but just for present company, I'll thank Kevin today for coming on up and thank all of our guests.
Yes.
Who have, you know, shown unbelievable enthusiasm to come on this show, which is strange because I also work at and own a brewery, and there are media obligations that you need to do as an owner or, you know, head brewer at a brewery. And the response to people coming on the show, being interested in coming on the show, has been, from my perspective, just unprecedented. There is interest in being a part of what we're trying to do here, which I think transcends like promoting a brand or, you know, having a profitable podcast. There's something more at work, and it's at work in the American Sour Beers book. It's at work in the Milk the Funk wiki and Facebook group. It's at work at the local homebrew clubs, and it's about turning sour beer into whatever you want to call it, sour beer, mixed culture beer, wild beer, into something that has been old and is made new again by American homebrewers, American craft brewers, in a way that has just, in the last 10 years, exploded in a very exciting time and way. And to be just a part of, like, to be, you know, one drop of ocean water on the surfboard that is riding this wave.
Whoa.
Has been,
good,
like,
one.
Just the ride of a lifetime. So
yeah.
I thank everyone who's involved in that. And, of course, thank you, Scott, for being here with me along the way. You're the bead of water next to me. And one day we will unite into one.
One day. Yeah, one day.
If we're not already.
That, man. Yeah,
I say
absolutely.
We end it.
All right.
Say we both kill ourselves.
Yeah, totally. We're peaking.
Yeah, there's no. Yeah.
Thanks for being here, Kevin. Thanks for the beers.
Cheers, brother. Thanks so much.
That was amazing. A tour de force performance by Kevin
indeed.
Today.
Stellar.
Thank you again to Scott. Thanks to Kevin. Thanks to Bevo. Thanks to all the sponsors and you terrific listeners. You never call. But you know what? Until next time, stay sour.
I really should have thought about this.